Hi, my name is Jeanette, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jeanette.
It's really good to be here. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Sam. Hey, Sam. Thank you for having me and asking me to come out. It's an honor and a privilege to share my story. I'm a little nervous. Oh, my goodness. So I'm really, really grateful to be here. I need to do this. I'm really sick. My sobriety date is November 15th, 2007. I have a sponsor in a home group. I sponsor others. And I guess I have a lot of time, so I can give you more than just a general way, but I want to share a little bit about what I was like before I drank, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I grew up in Florida. I grew up in an alcoholic home. It doesn't make me an alcoholic at all. But I remember, you know, there were times where I was pretty happy. Like, I climbed trees, I played with lizards, we went to the beach a lot. Like, but I also remember being alone a lot, and I preferred that. Like, I was very much a restless, irritable, and discontented child. Very much just very angry and very sad and very pitiful and very neurotic and very self-centered and woe is me. And I was constantly consumed with thoughts of what is wrong with me and why, like, I don't fit in, I don't belong here. And, you know, I could handle, like, one or two friends at a time. And anytime anyone new came into the picture, it was my mission to get rid of her, because if I didn't get rid of her, they were going to get rid of me, you know. And I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And so I spent, up until the age of 10, like, just it was in Florida, and I moved around a lot. We moved around to different places, and my mom was in and out of rehab a lot. I would go to my grandma's house a lot, and I would hang out with my grandpa, and, that was just my life. It wasn't that big a deal. It was nice. I lived in Florida, and we had a boat, and we were on the water, and then, you know, other times when I was with my mom, like, there were times where I didn't have dinner, and, you know, she was passed out in the bedroom, or we had to, like, put her in the shower, and I don't want to share that to put my mother in a bad light, because I know now that I love her very much, and I respect her in her journey as a human being, and she's doing the best she can, and she always has. And I couldn't appreciate what she went through until I realized I was exactly the same, and until I came here. And I was very, very discontented. I was just emotionally disturbed. I was difficult to be around, and I remember a woman telling me, when I was in elementary school, she's like, Jeanette, all you gotta do is just get up, you know, splash your face with water, brush your teeth, and go to class. Like, it's not a big deal. Just do it. Like, it doesn't have to be this big emotional investment, because everything was with me. Everything was this huge ordeal. Like, I could not, I had no power. I had no energy. I had no motivation. And, like, I knew that she didn't understand, because that was not enough of a solution for me. Like, just get up and do it. Just put a smile on your face, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Like, that doesn't work for me. And, I didn't really have a solution until I discovered booze. But I ended up, when I was in Florida, I ended up in Michigan, because I went to Michigan every summer. And I moved around a lot in Florida, but then I ended up in Michigan. I would go there for summer, and I would hang out with my cousins and crash at my aunt's house and terrorize her, of course, and because I knew that I was there for 2 weeks and I could do whatever I wanted, because I didn't have to do anything. Like, I was there, and, you know, she was basically stuck with me, and this is how I treated everyone in my life. And that summer, I got a call from my mom that I had to stay there for the year because she needed to get help. And so I ended up going to school in Michigan with my aunt, my other aunt, the responsible aunt, the one with rules and discipline. And but it was a really good experience. And somehow along the way, I ended up, they got in touch with my dad and my stepmom and my brother, who I had been disconnected from for a while. And I ended up back in Florida, reunited with my brother, who I hadn't seen in years, and my dad and my stepmom. And so I was, like, just immersed in this whole new environment. And there was a lot of love in that home. There was meals every day. There was, like, a warm, soft, clean bed. and there was structure and discipline, and there was accountability, which I wasn't too happy about. But, you know, I went from being this terrorizer of a little child, just doing whatever the heck I wanted, to, you know, now I have to actually be accountable for something and do chores, and people that genuinely were, like, you know, looking out for my best interest, which I guess, you know, everyone always has all along, but they actually had the ability to enforce it in me, you know? And so I was in a loving home at this point, back in Florida. We moved around again. We went to Ohio, and we ended up in Colorado. And so Colorado was, like, where everything changed. It was middle school, and my neuroses at that point had gotten so heightened that I had developed several little tics, you know? So I was the girl that was, like, like doing that, because I couldn't stop. Like, I was such a compulsive thing, and I was so consumed with myself. Like, I was constantly in my own head, and I did this thing with my fingers, like, which I still do every now and then when I'm thinking about myself. You know, and I like soft things, and I like weird smells. Like, I like the smell of paper and books and gasoline, and so. And then. What else was going on? I had this, like, twitch. I had this eye twitch, and, like, that's neuroses on fire, you know? So I was really desperate for a drink, and I had no idea. So middle school was pretty rough. Middle school was really rough. I spent my first week kind of following these girls around, and they were, like, you know, like, whispering, like, why is she following us? You know, like, what's going on? And I didn't know how to connect. I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know how to, like, ask you how you are doing and, like, listen to hear what you had to say, you know, and my whole world was just, like, very dark and very negative, and, like, the only things I knew how to talk about was, like, oh yeah, this weather is so bad, oh, I'm so tired, you know, like, I didn't have any light in my life. Like, I didn't have any light in my soul. I didn't know what positivity, like, I mean, it wasn't all that bad all the time, but I just remember trying to connect with people, and it was a struggle. It was really difficult. So my first drink, freshman year, that was when everything changed, because I went from this, like, deeply disturbed child, this broken girl, where everything is, like, black and white, dark and negative, just my mind raced uncontrollably that I couldn't get the words out, you know, like, I was constantly thinking, and when I drank, that all, like, washed away. And so this is what happened. We were on a field trip in Colorado, and, like, in Colorado, they have these hiking trips. I don't know if they do it out here, but, like, we would go hiking into the mountains. So we were all on the bus going in the woods, and this really cute guy, Kalani, he's got this really cool name. He's a bad boy in school. His name is Kalani, and he has liquor. And he's got these two water bottles full of liquor, and I confiscated one. You know, I may or may not have asked him if I could have it, but I didn't listen for the answer. I just took it. And up to that point, I was the girl that was never going to drink, and I was the girl that, like, when her best friend told her that she was smoking a clove cigarette in the alley, like, I cried, because I'm like, oh my God, you're going down such a bad path. And when I found out that my brother smoked pot, I cried. I was like, oh my God, you're going down such a bad path. And you know, something switched, and I really wanted to experience drinking. And you know, this was in the morning, so we're on a field trip, and he's drinking, and I drank rather quickly, but we were in separate groups. So there's, like, 13, 14-year-old kids all hanging out, going hiking, doing normal, like, school activity, and I'm getting wasted. And I just remember being a completely different person, and I really liked that. Like, something lit up inside of me where I could finally breathe. I could finally look you all in the eye. I was, like, playing. I was frolicking. I was talking and laughing, and, like, to be, like, the girl that I was up to that point, and then, like, a flip was switched when I drank, and that's what I wanted every time I drank. I desperately needed that. Like, alcohol got me through so much. It really did. I don't really have anything bad to say about booze. I just can't drink it safely. You know, it's unfortunate because I love it. But it got me through some really hard times, and that experience changed everything for me, because I finally had this, like, magical fix. Whether I knew it or not, or could, like, put it into words, I just knew subconsciously, or, like, deep down in my soul, I'm going to get drunk as often as I can. And that's really hard to do when you're 14, but I started to make friends with people that were drinking. I started to do it as often as I could, and my constant streaming thought was, why are we not drinking right now? Like, to everyone I was around, like, yeah, but why are we not drinking right now? We're hanging out in your, you know, parents' living room or driving to the gas station. Like, why are we not drinking right now, you know? They didn't get it, and I didn't understand that they didn't have the same experience that I had. And so, you know, high school, by senior year, I had a pretty rough high school experience. I remember, like, eating lunch in the bathrooms a lot, like, whenever the one or two friends that I had, which were good friends, like, these were girls that I could actually slowly start to be myself around, which was really hard for me at that time, and the kind of comfort that I could just kind of be goofy and be silly and laugh effortlessly that I couldn't do with the person next to them. Like, it was like this huge barrier that I created in my mind. Like, no, I can't be that way with them. They don't understand me. Whatever I told myself. You know, and, like, that's when I drank, I could be that way with everybody all the time. And so, like, whenever one of those girls would go off with another friend out to lunch, you could drive out and go to Wendy's or whatever, and I didn't go with them, and I ate lunch in the bathroom, or I went to the art room, and I devoted myself to drawing and painting and getting into advanced art in high school. That also got me through a lot of darkness. And I started hanging out with the younger crowd, like, because the younger girls thought it was so cool because I drank, and you know, we would go out and party, and then within, like, a matter of weeks, they were like, Jeanette, just, you know, you just drink so much, and we like you better when you're sober. And, like, no, stop it. Like, I couldn't handle that. And so, like, even the girls that looked up to me, and because of the way I drank, were, like, kind of off-put by the way I drank, because I was a pig of a drunk. Like, when I would make it to a party, if I could get drunk enough to not be so uncomfortable, like, if I went with a friend, I really needed them to hold my hand. Like, whether I could say it or not, or admit it or not, like, I would get really upset if you walked away and started socializing at a party, which is what you do. If they left me there, I felt abandoned. You know, I just, like, I couldn't deal. And so I would have to either show up drunk, and it wasn't long, because I was always looking for that sweet spot, you know, and so I'm getting drunk, and I hit that spot, and I'm already past it by the time I get there. And, you know, I'm passed out in the corner on the couch, like, it wasn't cute, it wasn't fun, but I, you know, I loved it. I absolutely loved it, and I chased it for as long as I could. And senior year, I moved out of my parents' house. They said, you know, when you turn 18, it's going to be different. Like, you can have more flexibility. It's not that big a deal. Just please stay with us. You know, we'll help you get through college if you stay. And, like, that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. And so I moved out early senior year, a little bit before I turned 18. And I actually moved, like, two blocks down the street. Like, I got my mattress out of my bedroom, put it on my friend's roof, and we just kind of, like, walked it down the street. Like, I'm free, and, you know, I'm two blocks away. But I actually didn't see them at all that whole year. And, like, I was really angry for no real reason other than, like, there wasn't, like, negativity in the household. There wasn't, you know, this pressure. Like, I just created so much pressure in my mind because I couldn't do what I wanted to do, and I couldn't drink the way I wanted to drink. And for someone, like, that grossly immature and defiant and rebellious, like, I could not handle any kind of accountability. And so I was really angry with them, and so I didn't talk to them. Like, I completely broke their hearts, and I drank as often as I could that year. And it turned into, like, drinking on the weekends, to drinking after class, to drinking at lunch, and then, like, oh my God, when I discovered morning drinking, holy crap, it was amazing. Like, I didn't realize you could drink in the morning, and you could be drunk all day. So that's what I started doing, and it was, like, vodka in the water bottle, and every now and then there was a girl that would, you know, want to drink with me, and, you know, there's just, Like, people just never followed through with drinking how I wanted to drink, you know? She'd be like, yeah, let's go get drunk. Let's go drink out by the lockers. We'll meet you out there. And then they didn't have this sense of urgency that I had, you know? So I just started just drinking alone because nobody could keep up. And senior year, I managed to graduate. It was a miracle. I should say that throughout that high school period, I had a probation officer at one point. I had been to jail, I think, twice, and, like, just weird things. Like, I passed out on my girlfriend's parents' couch, and, like, her parents came home, and I was in a blackout, and my girlfriends went to go to town. Like, the reason I went to their house was we're going to go, you know, pregame at the house, we're going to go eat some wings and watch some games, and I stayed at the house. I passed out on the couch, and I started, like, making out with her little brother, which was really awkward. And so her mom comes home, and she's furious. She's like, what are you doing in my house, and what are you doing to my son? Like, I don't know what's going on. And all they said was, just give us your parents' number, and we'll get them to come pick you up. And I was so terrified at that thought, and I didn't want them to find out. They said, just if you don't give us your parents' number, we're going to have to call the police. And so in my drunken stupor, I, like, ran down to the garage. I turned off all the lights, and I was hiding in the garage from her parents. And so I went to jail, basically. And my parents had to pick me up from jail anyway. So, you know, that didn't work out so well. And, you know, and I had a probation officer, and I remember they had, like, those packets where you have to, like, answer honestly about how much you drink, how much you use. And, you know, I couldn't answer any of those honestly. It was really uncomfortable. I did end up going to one AA meeting in that time. I think this was junior year or senior year. And, you know, when I got out of the meeting, I was like, well, that's really nice. I'm really happy for you guys. Like, this is great. Because I had been to AA. I went with my mom when I was a kid. And I was the one that was, like, neurotically counting Skittles into shapes and stealing from the Skittle machine and hanging out, like, during the prayer circle. Like, I, you know, it was just part of my life. My grandma went. My mom went. And, like, it was great. I'm really happy for you guys. This is great. I'm just not ready to stop drinking. And I remember after that meeting, I went down the steps, and my boyfriend with the green mohawk is there with, like, the whiskey bottle, like, okay, let's go, and, like, off to the races yet again. I wasn't ready. I definitely was not ready. And I don't remember anything anybody said in that meeting other than there was a couple visiting from out of town, and they were so grateful that they had a place to go. And I thought that was nice, and I still do. Like, it's like a sweet memory that I have. And so, you know, senior year, I managed to graduate. I don't remember hardly any of it. I remember Spanish class because it was the first class of the day, and, like, I was, like, not quite in a blackout yet. And I didn't have the courage to go to college. I remember looking it up. I remember talking to a counselor about it, but I was absolutely terrified. Like, I was not ready to grow up. I was not ready to move forward. I was not ready to move out of town. And so I stayed in town. And through a set of circumstances, my car got taken away from me. Like, it got taken away. And so my first action was to look in the paper and find a really cheap place to live on the bus line. And that happened to be Whitehaven Trailer Park. And that's where I ended up. Like, I loved it because it was like this little community of people, and we all just kind of, like, drink together. We hang out together. And I met this amazing guy who was, like, 35, had a dog, you know, had booze and party favors in the freezer. And, you know, that was the next 3 years of my life. And I ended up doing some pretty terrible things in that time. I, you know, what that turned into was me, basically, I got to remain a child, and I was very broken during that time. My world got really dark and really small, and I had a roommate / boyfriend / babysitter / drug dealer / booze provider. Like, I was set. I was good. Like, you can't tell me, like, this is not, like, I have arrived. And and I'm in the trailer park, and I'm, you know, I'm working. Whenever I can get a job, I'll get a job, and I'm not going to keep the job because I like to drink. And there was no real sense of urgency to make money, you know. And, you know, I would drink to the point where I would be so sick every day. And yet the only thing that put a smile on my face was drinking. Like, he would come home with booze, and I would, like, my face would light up. And, like, everything else was just dull and gray and meaningless. And so it's interesting because having that experience, I still have nothing bad to say about booze because booze got me through some really hard times. But it was all an illusion. That was the problem, is that it was all an illusion. Like, once I started, I could not stop. And if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. It was all consuming. And, like, that was my greatest obsession, is just being able to drink normally and just being able to get through life, being able to drink like other people. And I couldn't do it. Yet that was all I needed to do, is if I could just drink like my friends, if I could just do this. And it wasn't such a big deal that I had, like, there was no real desperation for me to control it like some other people have, because I didn't have to go to work. You know, I was completely taken care of. So I bet, you know, if I had to work and if I had to pay bills, I would have made more of an effort to try to control and enjoy my drinking. But I was pretty much just a pig of a drunk. Like, that was it. I just drank and I drank. And I did smoke crack for those 3 years towards the end. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But that was just adding fuel to the fire. My world was hell. And, you know, but there were some good times, too. So, like, you know, we got kicked out of Whitehaven Trailer Park, and I ended up, we found another trailer park. It was called Dream Island Plaza. And there's this, like, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. If you've ever been to Steamboat Springs, Colorado, it's gorgeous. But, you know, so, like, we've made new friends. There's a local bar at the beginning of the trailer park. You drive down, like, you can see people just, like, hanging out outside the house. And it was actually near a river. Like, I got drunk in that river several times, like, fully clothed, just passed out and playing in the river. You know, and I, again, like a child, I was climbing trees and just staying drunk. And, you know, it got to the point where there was no running water. There was no electricity. We had, like, 6 cats running around. I don't know how that happened. And, like, I could barely provide for myself. But, you know, I didn't think that, like, my life would ever turn into that, but it just, that's just the way it happened. And it was just, like really just living one day at a time. And so I lived in the moment, each moment. And I remember when I got sober, my sponsor described freedom. And I thought back then that was freedom for me. Like, I get to do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want. And yet my soul was so locked in bondage. Like, I was in so much pain that I wasn't actually free at all. Like, just being able to do what I want actually kept me in a lot of pain. And, you know, since coming to AA, realizing that, like, when I follow spiritual principles or, like, have some accountability in my life and, like, doing things that are actually really uncomfortable, I've gotten immense freedom. Like, my soul has gotten, like, liberated. And it's so completely contrary to what I thought was what I thought. And so what happened? We ended up in Indianapolis. In Colorado, I did get a DUI delivering pizzas, because I do everything drunk. So I was delivering pizzas and I got a DUI. And I was the kind of, like, I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have a strobe light to look for the address. I didn't have a map on me. Like, I was just winging it, and I was wasted. And I did that every night. And I ended up in a ditch one night because I backed out of this driveway that wasn't the right house, and it got stuck in this ditch, you know. And so, like, there's the house and the driveway and this hill with the trees. And I couldn't, like, push the car back up. And so I was trying to, like, loosen the emergency brake and push it at the same time. And it kept sliding back. So I would, like, pull on the emergency brake and try to push it up. And it wasn't working. So I ended up, like, walking around the neighborhood. Like, I'm an emaciated, like, bloated, gray, you know, like, tears streaming down my face, stringy hair, wasted. And I'm knocking on doors, and nobody would let me use their phone. That's how bad it was. They're just like, I'm sorry, I'm just house-sitting. Like, I can't let you in. And I go to the next door. And the same thing. Like, they're all house-sitting, apparently. I don't know. And so They did call the police for me, though, so that was nice. And I ended up, you know, I got a DUI. So that was another year of avoiding probation, not paying anything off. I went to alcohol therapy again, and, you know, I would go to that drunk. And a year later, like, it took about a year for them to catch up to me, and I had, like, a bunch of traffic tickets, and I had warrants out, and they ended up knocking on the trailer park door, and I scooted out the back and hopped in the next door, because they're, like, lined up next to each other, and our friends Dave and Daryl live next door, real names, and I hopped in, and I was like, Dave, the cops are here, I need to hide in your room. And so I did turn myself in the next day, and I went to jail for, like, 30 days, and that was quite a unique experience, because they had, like, hot food and running water, clean clothes, and I was hanging out with women. They were all insane, but no more insane than I was. One of them was pregnant. One of them was, like, the local, the woman who was in the papers for stealing from the gas station, like, thousands of dollars. And, you know, I was with just women that I had heard about in the papers, you know. And so it was kind of an exciting time for me. And I learned, you know, it was kind of a breath of fresh air, really. It's jail is not pleasant or fun for a lot of people, but it was just kind of, that was just my experience at that time. And really, it was just like, my roommate at the time looked at me and, like, I had my hair curled and I had makeup on, because you can use, like, crayons and, like, heat it down with the water and make makeup and curl your hair and, like, the paper towels. Like, I was playing, it was like a game to me. And that was pointed out to me. But I remember late at night, when all the women would go to bed, I was so restless that I would stay up and I would read out of the big book in the 12 and 12, and I took notes. And I didn't really have any kind of plan. I just remember reading, and I have those notes still of things that I noticed and I related to. But the night I got out, I got drunk, of course. Like, so, you know, those are just things that happened. And I spent, I guess, a few more months in town, and we booked it to Indianapolis. We got out of town. I'd heard, like, things, like, bad things are about to happen, and so we made it to Indianapolis, and that was another probably 9 months of hell. Like, I brought myself there. I was just slowly spiraling the drain. Our best friend killed himself, and the guy that I was with, basically the person that I sucked the life out of one day at a time, he ended up getting in a really bad accident, and he went to the hospital. And I stayed around for a few more weeks, but I kind of, like, lost all hope. Like, all my resources were gone. I was, like, the desperation had fully kicked in. Being the selfish, self-centered taker that I was, I had nowhere else to turn. So then I finally called and asked for help. So I didn't get here through virtue. I got here because I had nothing else. I had nowhere else to go. And, man, I made amends to him this summer, and it was amazing. I'll hopefully tell you about that. But so I ended up in Florida, and I stayed drunk for another month. And I didn't really have any plan. I didn't have a solution. I didn't know what I was going to do. But I ended up in Florida, and I did end up going to a rehab after about a month of drinking, because my mom threatened to make me go to work. She's like, what are you here for? And I didn't realize that I forgot to tell her that I wanted to get sober. I told the other set of parents that, you know, it's very manipulative. And so I did. I went to rehab, and it was interesting. Like, I smoked a lot of cigarettes. We played a lot of cards. I learned how to throw football, and they brought a lot of AA meetings in, and we went to a lot of AA meetings on our little druggy buggy. And I did get a boyfriend out of rehab, of course, because I needed a higher power, like, instantly. I needed somebody, something. And so I got really lucky, though, because I was willing, and I was as willing as I could be, and I was as desperate as I could be, and I cried at every meeting I went to. I related to everything, and something was shifting inside of me where I really felt that you guys really understood what was wrong with me, and I got a lot of hope here. And I met a woman probably at my second meeting out of rehab, and you know, she found me nestled in between two dudes that I were from my rehab, of course, and you know, she's like, "Let's go to a meeting. Let's go, come with me." And so I just like started hanging out with her every night. Like we went to meetings all over town. She brought me, introduced me to people. We went to conventions and conferences and workshops and retreats and, you know, and I spent as much money as I could, and I did everything I possibly could, and I just trusted her. She's like, "You just show up and everything will be okay." Like people took care of me. They paid for my meals. They helped me like get hotels, and we went out of town. Like I loved it. I was, my world exploded. And during that time, she got me like actively working in the steps. And so, I was on a pink cloud for a while. Like I was really happy and really like obscenely giddy. And I, you know, like from where I came from, like that's probably the only place I could have ended up was just like obscenely happy. And, I did fall off that pink cloud at one point. But I had been working the steps, you know, throughout that time. So I had somewhat of a foundation and, you know, so, she just got me into really just learning about myself, because when I rode around with her, she shared her experience, and she talked about how sick she was, she talked about how she used to drink, she talked about how she used to think, how she still thinks, how she used to act, how she still acts, and I knew that she was human, and I knew that she had a solution, and I knew that she had recovered, and I knew that she knew exactly what was wrong with me, and I had complete faith in her and in AA at that point. And so I did everything that she suggested. I did everything that I didn't want to do. Like, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. Like, I couldn't look you in the eye. I couldn't talk to you. I could maybe handle one person at a time. And even then, I was so consumed with what you were thinking about me and what I was feeling and what was going on that, like, I couldn't have, like, a normal conversation. I was so disconnected from God's kids. And she made me a greeter at our home group meeting, of course. So it was perfect for me, though, because I had to sit in the front, and I stood in the front and just shook everybody's hand, and it slowly got me out of myself, where I was like, the self-centeredness was slowly being etched away, and I didn't have to engage in full-on conversations, but I got to, like, you know, look into people's eyes and welcome them. Like, it was like little baby steps, little things that I didn't have the energy or the willingness to ever do. So she knew exactly what she was doing. And so, you know, I started to grow up here. And my life has changed so much. I think the first couple years I worked through my steps, and I think I started making amends in my second year to family and paying back money. And I was just like, really, I was still pretty selfish and self-centered. You know, I was just a ball of emotions. I was an emotional misfit. The boss that I had, she would constantly tell me to just focus, like, please just try to focus today, because I was all over the place. And some amazing things happened when I first got sober, where, you know, I got a job, and I started saving money, and I got my car back. Finally, it took like 4 or 5 years, and I guess like 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I got my car back, and I could drive, and, you know, I ended up having to end the relationship with the rehab boyfriend and actually try to trust in God, like have a relationship with my higher power and have friendships. And I started to grow up here, because when I got here, I was so broken and so immature and so locked inside myself. And my second year, 2.5 years, I hit an emotional bottom. I was at such a dark place that I could not get myself out of bed. I couldn't. It was really hard for me to get to class. I was going to school. I was working. I was doing meetings. I was trying to help people, but honestly, I probably wasn't making that much of an effort. But I was doing all the things on the checklist that I'm supposed to do, you know? And I was dying inside. And I felt so disconnected and so lonely. I kind of had to resurrender. And so what I love about AA is that you guys are always here for me, and it's okay to always be honest, because that's one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do and constantly resurrender to, is how do I get honest about where I'm really at? How do I talk about what's really going on and, you know, face the judgment or not? Like, I'm going to be judged, and it's just going to happen. Like, my closest friends are alcoholics. So, yeah, you know, there's going to be people in my group that may or may not judge me. And I know that when I was new, I judged everybody. So it doesn't really matter because, you know, so I had to really resurrender. And what that meant for me was taking a look at this inventory process that we have here. You know, because I had worked my fourth step and I had worked my eighth step. I wasn't really surrendered to that daily inventory, or even like just trying it like whenever emotional upheavals come up. Like, and I'm here to report that inventory process has saved my life. It's actually, I can feel it as a working part of my mind today. And along with everything else we do here, like, I had to surrender yet again to not only AA and to guidance and outside perspective, but to this higher power that was so elusive to me. And so, because I had experienced God, I was lucky. I experienced God several times in times of really intense loneliness and darkness. That's when I was desperate enough to seek, you know, and I think that my soul was crying out loud enough that I was willing to listen. And I've had some profound experiences. And so, you know, I've grown a lot here. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've experienced a whole another world. And I've definitely have had a whole another chance at life. I've been led in the wrong direction, you know, and I've also had the privilege and the ability to ask for help and surrender and find out what AA is for me and what AA is really saying in that literature. And sometimes AA members aren't always right. And so it's pretty profound experience. And that also includes me. You know, so like I've had to insert my foot in my own mouth because I've been wrong many times. And the dependency that I've placed on people is something that I always have to be aware of, because that's where I get really sick and that's where I can get really hopeless. I have to rely on my higher power, and I have to rely on the principles and what AA is talking about. I believe wholeheartedly the AA is perfect, exactly as it is. The people in AA, not so much, including me. Like, I am a sick individual. And that's why I need this thing so bad. Like, it has absolutely transformed me from the inside out, and I have a lot of work to do. I'm getting a little off track. But I want to share my summer. The person that I told you about is like somebody that I don't know, like, the years went by and I wasn't able to get out to Colorado, I guess, you know, for whatever reason. I just made up reasons why I couldn't get to Colorado. You know, I was able to make amends to my family and some close friends, and some financial places that I owed money to. And there was the where I did all my damage was in Colorado. You know, like, I caused a lot of damage in sobriety, but I the people that I hurt the most were in Colorado, and I never made it out there. And I had a high school reunion this summer, and weird enough, I was actually helping plan it. I was actually excited about it, and I was really looking forward to seeing all these people. Like, that's how much AA has changed me from within. Because I hated all of those people for no good reason. But I hated them, and I was sure they all judged me. So I was planning the high school reunion, 10-year reunion. It was a blast. It was so much fun. And I ended up reuniting with my dad and my stepmom, and I made a plan to make amends to this person that I was with for 3 years. And it was very interesting because they were still kind of in that space that I left 10 years ago. You know, like, they were still locked in that space. And I got to looked him in the eye and, like, God, the amends are so powerful. If you're new and you're worried about the fourth step or making amends, don't be. Like, whatever happens is going to happen. And if you do it honestly and humbly and with guidance, like, it's so profound. I did not expect this to happen. But, so, I got to look this person in the eye and thank God for the sponsorship that I had and, you know, for AA teaching me how to make things right with the universe and with people because, I mean, I think about it. When I left, it was probably 2006, but I had hurt that person from 2004 and it had been almost 10 years, you know, like I hurt them from 2004 to 2007 or a little bit earlier and I caused so much harm. Like I basically like took someone hostage and let them believe that I was somebody other than I wasn't and that I loved them and that I, you know, like you got to be pretty sick and depraved to convince somebody that you love them when deep down inside you know they don't. You know you don't and you're just using them. Like like it's not fun to admit that, but that's where I was and so I couldn't say all of those things because that would cause him more harm. But what the things that I said were the things, you know, what did I say? You know, just making it right by saying I was wrong to do this and it was not okay for me to treat you this way. And, like, I had a whole list of things and, like, reassuring them that I know that they did the best they could and I really love them for what they did. And, you know, thank you, because I know you did the best you could, you know. That poor guy. But something really amazing happened because that night he said to me, I've had people make amends to me before. Like, I've had people that have gone to AA and they've made amends to me before. And nothing has ever felt as genuine as what you said to me tonight. And that's not me. That's AA. Like, I don't know how to do that. I've had to get help with that. And then a few days passed. And he said again, he called and he said, I want to thank you again for what you said because I finally have closure. That's where it kills me. Because, like, one, if I hadn't been doing this, I wouldn't have even had the thought or the energy to make things right with this person or to let them know that I'm gravely sorry for what I did, that I was wrong for what I did. Like, some people need to hear that. And just to think all these years that have passed that I've deprived him of that, you know? So not to live in regret or anything like that, but just to be constantly vigilant about who and what I am and what I can do to constantly grow and to be one of God's kids and, like, to not... What is happening? I'm sorry, I'm so emotional. To be constantly causing harm everywhere I go. So I don't cause as much harm as I used to, but there's nothing wrong with being vigilant about causing even less harm each day, you know, like, and heaven forbid, like, actually trying to help somebody other than myself. And it was a very profound summer, and there was another person that I made amends to who was a roommate that... You know, come to find out, he's 6 months sober, and we got to go to a meeting together. You know, like, this dude was somebody that was in the trailer park when things were bad, like, really bad. Like, no running water, no electricity. He didn't sign up for that. I mean, he was drinking, too, but it's, you know, you don't sign up for that when you get a living situation. So, you know, we got to hang out, and I got to make amends to him. We went to a meeting. Like, how amazing is that? And... What's happened? This year has been really crazy. I've had some really bad news, pretty traumatizing for me. Like, you know, it was pretty bad. I mean, it's just not that big of a deal now looking back. Because what shifted inside of me as I was receiving this news about my life, you know, I wasn't going to get what I thought I deserved, the finances were bad. I can't go to school this year. Like, sounds silly, but, like, you know, I was very much relying on being able to get through school and getting the money that I needed and some health issues that I receive news on. And, you know, my go-to is to curl up in the fetal position and give up. Like, you heard my story. That's what I do. Like, I don't want to face life. And I didn't even have that option this year. Like, my instinct was, F this, I'm out, I'm done, I can't do it. I've worked this hard, and this is, you know, it's not like I got cancer, you know, it's not like I, but it was pretty bad, you know, like this, the news, my emotional reactions to things are so intense, thank you alcoholism, that I just like, I just can't, like it's like overload, like I just can't handle it. And so, but what I experienced this year, which is like a culmination of day after day, week after week, month after month of surrendering to this process, doing the inventories, asking for help, praying and surrendering to this way of life. My instinct was F this. And within 30 seconds, I was like, no, Jeanette, like, you can do this. You can do that. You got to do this. Like, these are the mistakes you've made, like self-will run riot. Like, I couldn't even feel sorry for myself because AA has enabled me to see clearly the mistakes that I made and the actions that I can take. And that's it. It's like I am finally able to be fully self-supporting in all areas of my life, emotionally, mentally, physically, socially, financially, spiritually. And that's kind of what I've always wanted, you know, like how do those people out there do it? How do they do that? How do they function? And like AA, I need AA so bad. I love AA. I'm so glad I have it. I don't know what I would be. I try not to be hypothetical about where I would be, but I know that when I'm not doing AA and when I'm not living by spiritual principles and when I'm not surrendered to this process, it gets really dark really quick, and I get really lonely. I've had some moments where I just feel so completely lost and all alone in the world, and then I realize it's because I'm disconnected from my higher power, and I'm not reaching out to like-minded people. Like, I love alcoholics. I love all of them. I love them, and I'm so glad I have people just like me to talk to. I feel completely blessed to be able to participate in this because my life was so lonely, you know, like, not because of anything anybody did to me, but because I was so lonely in my own mind and so disconnected. And thank God for AA. Like, holy crap. So this year has been very emotional and in a good way. Like, not like the bad emotions, but the good emotions where I'm like, holy crap, I'm so grateful to be sober. And that's not what I expected because I had heard the years 5 through 10 are pretty rough. That's where people start to peter out. So I was kind of prepared for that. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the next year. I don't know. But I'm really grateful to be in this place where I can see clearly how AA is saving my life and is transforming me. And not through my own virtue, you know. It's just like I do a lot of things because I want to be free and I want to be happy. But then I'm starting to experience, like, actually wanting to do it. You know, like, really genuinely wanting to call people. And, like, when I start to get a little, like, restless, I start calling people, you know. And that's something I used to talk about when I was new. But, like, no, I'm actually doing it this time. You know, like, I'm, I have only good things to say about the inventory process that we have. I know I've mentioned it because I rebelled against it for so long. And I would do it to appease my sponsor. And, you know, I did it for attention. I did all kinds of things for attention in the first 5 years. You know, and now I have a sponsor who's out of town. And, I mean, she's in Arizona. So, you know, I get to talk to her regularly and then sometimes not so regularly. And in the meantime, like, it's really, truly self-accountability and, you know, how surrendered am I to this process and to what we do here. You know, I have fears and I have doubts, and whenever I get really, like, kind of squirrely, I think, oh, it's because my sponsor's far away. I need to get someone here, and it may or may not be true. I don't know. But I do know that when I'm fully surrendered and I'm taking responsibility for myself with me and with God and with my group and with my friends and with my sponsor, I can be anywhere in the world, and I'll be fine. That's a really exciting place to be. So I think I'm pretty much done. I'm really grateful to be here. I'm really grateful to be sober. If you're new here, AA works. It really works. It saved a wretch like me. Like, oh my God. And thanks again, Sam. And thank you for my friends for coming out to support me. It's really nice to have you guys. I really appreciate it. So that's it. Thanks.